Wow, what a story. My name is Paul Byrd, Fox Sports colleague of Ernie Johnson. I have not been shot in either leg. I did get dressed this morning up on a farm in North Georgia. Got dressed in the dark, so I accidentally put on my son's shirt so my buttons do not reach on the neck. And I do have a bunch of bow ties because of Ernie Johnson, who I'm introducing, a great friend of mine. I'm a huge fan of this guy. I want to be like him when I grow up. This is a clip-on. So I'm trying, buddy. I'm going to get there. What do I think of when I think of Ernie Johnson? I've been in a study, a men's group with Ernie Johnson for almost 20 years. We've been through good times and bad, good stories, tough stories. We've loved through it all. Bill Clinton was in a debate with Mother Teresa, and the issue was abortion. And Mother Teresa went first, and she said, "Give your children to me." And Bill Clinton had to go second and follow her, and he made a brilliant statement, and he said this. He said, "It's hard to argue with a life that is so well lived." And when I think of that comment, I think of Ernie Johnson. I can talk about his multiple Emmys, how he has taken the TBS TNT show to the next level. I can talk about his wonderful voice that is so soothing that in our men's group, we make him read all of the verses because we feel so good afterwards. He's amazing. But what I love so much about him is the man that he is and how hard it is to argue with the life that is so well lived. He loves his wife, Cheryl. He has two biological children, has adopted four from Romania. My personal favorite is Michael, who is such an incredible human being. He's a little autistic and gets so excited when he reads brochures on cars and boats. And when he gets excited, he starts yelling, "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy," and starts making noises. And I just look over at Ernie, who's looking at his boy with such love as if that is his own. What an incredible man. We had a tough election recently, and the world was so polarized. And Ernie Johnson got on TBS, on national TV, and told everyone about his relationship with Jesus Christ. And he talked about his write-in vote for John Kasich. I have no idea how you got away with that. And the world looked on, and Democrats and Republicans agreed with him. Again, it is so hard to argue with the life that is so well lived. The last thing I'm going to say about Ernie Johnson is being in the media now with Fox. There's so much chaos in a broadcast. And I have a little ADD, and somebody's talking in my ear, and then I'm supposed to give a point on this and all that. And amongst all the chaos and the commercials and the breaks, we have something called a talkback button. And you push that button, and that's when you find out what a person's really like. It's like a sponge. You got to squeeze somebody to find out what's inside. And amongst all the pressure, you get to know what your colleague is really like. I've been down to TBS, worked with Fox, worked with CBS. I'm here to tell you that Ernie Johnson's reputation in the media business is flawless. He is the exact same person when he hits the talkback button that you see on TV. A man that I dearly love, who is a great friend, who is a tremendous human being, and lives a life that is very hard to argue because it's so well lived. Ernie Johnson, Jr.
No, please sit down. I just like ready to leave. Thank you, Paul. That was that's beyond description. Thank you so much. Mike's story was fantastic. And It's just great to be here this morning because I mean, I worked last night, We walked out of the studio about 2 o'clock in the morning, and it's just nice to have a mic on and not be interrupted by Shaq and Charles and Kenny. You know, it's just it's just great. You know, they're the greatest guys in the world. We've been working together for ages, but there are certain moments where you don't need Shaq asking you, Ernie, how come you keep saying the Warriors play in Oakland? Because that's where they play, Shaq. I had no idea. I thought they played in San Francisco. And it's like, you're in the Hall of Fame, you played for 15 years and didn't know where you were playing the Warriors. But that's great. But these guys are wonderful. And I spoke last year at the commencement at the University of Georgia, my alma mater, 1978, class of 78. And go ahead, Bulldogs, please. And I told those kids, those graduates, I said, here's to hoping you have a job you get to do and not a job you got to do. Because there's a big difference. There's too many folks driving to work because they got to. There are some of us who go to work and know that we get to do what we love to do. And I hope that's the boat that you find yourselves in here this morning, too. I'm not going to give I don't like standing behind a podium, and I don't want to read a speech or just, I'm going to show you a bunch of pictures today. I'm going to tell you some stories. And I think through it all, you're gonna find that really, one of the bottom lines in this whole thing is that I stand in awe every day of how our good Lord orchestrates life. How he makes this dot connect to this dot and this one to this one, and ultimately all for his glory. There's a good start. All right, what I like to talk about has a lot to do with this picture from Murphy Candler Park. Everybody know Murphy Candler Park? This is when Murphy Candler Park wasn't very big. This is back in the 60s. And if you look on the middle row and you count three over from the left, the guy who's kind of hunched over right there, that's me. And I'm the shortstop for the V's, V-E-E-S. Had some unbelievable games that year against the K's were really good. I think the R's were pretty tough. But we were the V's. And once upon a time, as I'm playing shortstop for the V's, a kid on the other side hits a ground rule double. Over my head, it's short, bounces, goes over that fence you see there. And so the coach came up to tell us what was going to happen. Now, okay, they got the go-ahead run now at second base. So you 8 and 9 year olds, listen up, because if the balls hit to you, I want you to do this. You know, most everybody had zoned out. And we go back to our positions, but the game cannot continue because we do not have a left fielder and we do not have a center fielder. They have gone back to the fence at Murphy Candler Park. They have climbed over the fence in search of the ball. So not only were they a little strapped at Murphy Candler those days when it came to naming the teams with any creativity. Apparently, we were short of baseballs, too. So the kids went to look for it. And so, of course, we went out to find the left fielder and the center fielder. And as we looked at the fence, we could see the ball plainly 10 feet away. But 10 feet away this way, we saw the left fielder and the center fielder eating blackberries. And as an 8, 9 year old, yeah, that was funny. And my dad thought it was a riot because my dad played professional baseball and had never been involved in a blackberry delay. But but as I grew older and hopefully wiser, I really looked at that as kind of a modern day parable. I looked at that blackberry moment and said, if I get too caught up in the game, I'm going to miss these blackberry moments. Moments that are so sweet,
moments that may not come along again, that you got to grasp them right then. And these kids, to their credit, they did. And so as I was older and I'm thinking, what's the game I'm too focused on? Is it the next conference call? Is it the next meeting? Is it the next round of golf? Is it, you name it, whatever your game is. If you're too caught up in that, you miss this. And I think God has put blackberries out there within arm's reach. If we have the eyes to see it, the heart to detect it, you know, and it comes into play every day. It comes into play with the coworker who just needs somebody to talk to him for 2 minutes. It's somebody who's struggling who says, I just wish somebody would listen. And I'm too focused. I got this coming up. I'm too focused on this. I don't have time for that. You can provide these blackberry moments. You can spread God's love. You can spread joy. But you can't be this focused. You know, one of my favorite authors is a pastor out of Menlo Park, California, John Ortberg. He's written some great books. One of them is called Soul Keeping. If you haven't read it, I recommend it. And in that book, he talks about his relationship with Dallas Willard. Dallas Willard has wisdom for this whole room. Dallas Willard said the greatest enemy of the spiritual life is hurry. And you must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. Not kind of try to think about maybe eliminating hurry from your life, but ruthlessly eliminating hurry from your life. Because if you're in a hurry, it's going to be this. It's not going to be this. I'm going to tell you a story about spreading blackberries, and I don't want any of the guys in here to feel bad, okay? I'm not saying you got to do this just because I do it. I buy my wife flowers every week. We've been married 35 years, and if I continue this tradition, then it'll probably get to 36. But here's the deal. Once I went in there, and I'm not talking about going to a florist. I'm not talking about it has to be expensive. This is Publix, $12.99, $14.99. So I'm always buying my wife one of those. I bought two one day. Went out to the car, put the groceries away, put the flowers in there, and I saw an elderly woman walking to a handicapped spot. And I said, you know what? Cheryl can deal with one of these. I took the other one over, and I didn't want to scare her. I said, excuse me, ma'am, just for a second. Don't think I'm crazy, but I'd just like you to have these flowers. I bought some for my wife. I hope you could use some. And she said, I lost my husband a year ago today, and I haven't had flowers since. Folks, we can spread blackberries. And it may seem insignificant to you. It may seem like you're doing nothing. It can change a life. I'm a sportscaster. Wrote a book called Unscripted. Sportscaster, author, husband, father, blackberry farmer. That's what I take wonderful pride in. I just want to be a blackberry farmer. I want to create those moments that somebody will look back on and say, man, that just changed my life. Because ever since that day where I got the two, I always do that now. I always give another one away. And I think the kids are coming with me sometimes when we're out and we're buying groceries and we get, are we going to give flowers away today? Yeah, we're giving them away. Because you don't know who it's going to impact. And it doesn't have to be that. It can be a cup of coffee at the QT. It can be anything that says, I'm not thinking about me today, I'm thinking about you. Be a blackberry farmer. My life's been full of these blackberry moments. And my dad pitched for the Braves back in the 50s, got himself a World Series ring. Became a broadcaster. And he's the man I always looked up to. And here's a word for you, moms and dads. Kids have superpowers. They see and hear everything. Every act that you make, how you react to every situation, they see and they hear. You know how I know that? Because that's how I learned from my dad. My dad wasn't one of these guys who would sit me down and say, here's what you need to do. Here are the four things. Follow these and you're golden. He was a guy who I got to tag along at the ballpark with. And I would just watch him. And I would learn. And I would see how he treated folks with respect. And I'd see how seriously he took his job, but how he didn't take himself that seriously. Realized that the job he had was special. And he was lucky to have it. Fortunate. He had a get-to job. I'd go to the ballpark and I'd watch him make his way from the field back up to the press box to call the game. And I'd see somebody from Unadilla, Georgia, up here at Atlanta Stadium to watch a weekend Braves game and say, hey, Ernie. He'd go over there and talk to him for 15 or 20 minutes like they were long lost buddies. My dad never told me you had to do that. I just watched him. Those kids have superpowers. And they see and they hear everything. There's a little story behind this picture. Now, the woman in the picture used to cash the checks at the bank in Macon, Georgia, where I anchored the news. Channel 13 down in Macon. And that woman is Cheryl, and she was working her way through school at Mercer, and she was the drive-in teller. And she tells people, we met through 6 inches of bulletproof glass. and we did. And she knew what I was making. And when your first TV job out of school is anchoring the news in Macon, Georgia, you're not making a whole lot of money. And it was, look, who's ever late notice comes in first, that's the one I'm paying. This week, it's this year, it's the power this month. Next month, it might be the car, whatever. I'll try to get through. But Cheryl and I got married, and we had two kids, Eric and Maggie. Who have made us grandparents, and for you grandparents out there, there's nothing better in the world, is there, than being a grandparent? I can tell by the overwhelming response that you probably, I guess it's not that great for everybody, but it is for us. But anyway, thanks, Gramps. So here we are, and I'm living out the script. Living out the script. Got a beautiful wife, great job, two kids, a boy and a girl. It's awesome. And then we go unscripted. Because I came home from work one day, and if you could put the picture back up, my wife says, you know what we need to do today? And I'm saying, chicken or fish. Either is good. And she said, you know, now, here's what we need to do. She had watched this ABC News 2020 story about these Romanian orphans who had basically been warehoused and forgotten back in 1990, 91. He said, we need to adopt one of those. And I said, really, chicken or fish? And we investigated this, and we said, okay, let's do this. Let's go unscripted. Let's shake it up. And we had no idea who she was going to meet over there. It wasn't like we had a picture or anything that says, go find this child, bring him. We said, let's go get a little girl, like under a year old. And Cheryl gets there. And so this, she's handed this little boy, who's almost 3 years old, has never been outside, aside from the day that he was found abandoned in a park. He can't walk and he can't talk. He's got one foot that's turned in. And the nurse at this orphanage hands this boy to Cheryl. And you know what she said? Don't take this boy, he's no good. Don't take this boy, he's no good. My wife and I are on the phone from, she's in Bucharest, I'm in Atlanta. And she tells me the story, and then she says, Ern, I don't know if I can go the rest of my life wondering whatever happened to that kid. I said, bring him home. You know, I think Jesus looked at me once and said, I got some issues. And he probably told his father, I got one down here. He's got some issues. And my heavenly father said, bring him home. We've had this heart for adoption. And you're saying, where are the BlackBerry moments when you got this kid? You see, what was crazy is when we got Michael home, he would be diagnosed with muscular dystrophy. But in those early months, we would awaken every morning. To that. The first time it happened, we were like, what's going on? And we walked in Michael's room. He's banging his head against a crib. Nobody paid any attention to this kid for 3 years. And now we had him under our roof. We'd gone on unscripted. And then you get hit with muscular dystrophy, and there's no cure for it. And a lot of kids don't get out of their teens when they have it. So where are the BlackBerries? The man in the suit there is Phil Beaulieu. Phil Beaulieu is the basketball coach at Mill Creek High School, Gwinnett County. It'd be a good idea to have some Phil Beaulieu in you. Because what Phil Beaulieu did was, he met Michael Johnson in the hallways at Mill Creek High School and just heard the wheelchair. And he followed him into a room. And Paul has talked about Michael and his developmental delays and autism, and it's unbelievable memory. So he'll remember you by what you drive. So he talks to Phil Beaulieu about his car. What drive, coach? He tells him. And as Phil turns to leave, Michael says what he's always loved to say. He didn't start talking until he was 8, by the way. But he's always loved to say, love you too, even if you don't tell him first. Which is a very endearing quality he has. So Coach Beaulieu turns to leave, and then Michael hits him with a sledgehammer. Love you too, coach. And the next thing I know, I'm getting a note from Phil Beaulieu saying, I want this kid on my varsity basketball team. And Phil and I meet, and he and I had never met before. And And I said, okay, number one, you're aware that the chair is not like decoration. No, he says, I envision Michael as my 5 foot tall impact player with no vertical leap. I said, I'm kind of hooked. What's that mean? He says, I want him to teach my players maximum effort, because I know everything he does is with all he's got. He said, and I want him to teach a heart for others. He says, because he really hit me with that love you too. And I said, we're in. And here's the story about Phil Beaulieu. Phil's teaching his high school students. And just in the middle of a daily assignment, he'd say, hey, everybody hold on for 1 second. I got a story to tell you. I got to tell you about this kid, Michael Johnson. I know he's a friend of mine. He loves to say love you too. And he said, and I know we're in a high school setting and everybody loves sign language and mostly it involves one finger. He said, but let me teach you another one. He said, let me teach you this. He says, this is I love you in sign language. So he's teaching all of his kids this when he's not teaching them history and English and everything else. So a few seasons go by and Michael's sitting behind the bench. He's kind of the assistant coach. Thing is, he doesn't know if a ball is blown up or stuffed, couldn't care less, but he loves being one of the guys. This don't take boy is no good is now front and center on this basketball team, where they put their hands on his in his lap and say, 1, 2, 3, Hawks, and they take the floor. And he's the one who's sitting behind the bench when one of the kids fouls out and throws a towel down and slams it into his seat. And Michael looks at him and says, Spencer drives in a Suzu. And then Spencer turns around and looks at him and says, love you too, Michael. So 3 years of this goes on, and we go to senior night. And all the seniors are getting their blankets with their names on them and the logo of the school. And they call Michael up last, and at that point he was still able to drive his chair. And parents are clapping. And I look up in the student section and they're standing like this. Don't take, boy's no good. Yeah, you tell me. And who does that? God does that. Only God takes a basketball coach from Indiana and puts him in Braselton, Georgia, and takes a Romanian orphan and sticks him in Braselton, Georgia, and puts them together on a basketball floor and teaches a school love. I can't do that. God wrote that script. And did I tell you, I stand in awe every day of the way he orchestrates life. He's 29 years old now. Has exceeded all expectations. In fact, the neurologist, when we brought him home from Romania, said he's never going to bond with anybody. He's never going to talk. What you see right now is what you get. Well, you were wrong. Don't take, boys, no good. It's been one BlackBerry moment after another with that kid. I'm not breaking any news here when I say that cancer's touched everybody in this room in some way. Might be you personally, might be a friend of yours, might be a family member. 2003, I was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. 2006, I had chemotherapy. That's when this picture was taken. Thankfully, I have a pretty decently shaped head. But it was at this time, in that episode, where a mantra for my life took shape. And this really is predated to 1997. It's Mike's story. You know, you talk about growing up and kind of getting away from church and that kind of thing. And I was the same way, you know. Went to the University of Georgia, as I said, and Sunday mornings at UGA for me were a way to sleep off Saturday night. And then my career began to take shape and my family began to take shape, and I really hadn't given God a second thought. And so, look, in 1997, on December 10th of 1997 is when the light went on for me. When I was having lunch with a pastor at what was then Crossroads, now 12 Stone Church in Lawrenceville. And I had told Kevin Myers, the pastor there, that, you know, we had started going to church a few weeks earlier after years and years and years away. And I had told him, I said, you and I need to sit down and talk about some stuff because God is really messing with me. And so that December 10th of 1997 at O' Charlie's restaurant, I'm having that fried chicken salad with honey mustard on the side, and it's good. And Kevin Myers and I are joining hands, and I'm praying, and I'm surrendering, and I'm saying, enough of the me-centered life. I say, because I've gotten to this point where I'm like, is this all there is? It's just what I'm making of it. Or is there a greater purpose here? And that day in 1997 changed my life. And so when I'm going through this episode, I sit down with Kevin Myers, and I'm frank with him. I mean, I got cancer now. I've got cancer, and I've got Michael in his situation. I've got a daughter from Paraguay that we adopted a couple years after Michael. So now we got this family of four, and me and Cheryl were trying to get it done. And I said, now this cancer, and how long am I going to be around? And I said, Kevin, I want to punch God right in the nose. I said, we're being 100%. You want the truth? That's the truth. And he said, let's think back to that day in 1997. He said, when you surrendered, when you put your faith and put your trust in Jesus Christ. I said, oh, yeah. He says, so what's that trust looking like now? And he's writing on a Starbucks napkins that I still have. He says, it looks like trust if. It looks like trust when. I said, you're right. Right now, it's looking like I'll trust him if the next test comes back and says I don't have to have any more chemo. I'll say it. I'll trust him when this goes away and we can move on. He said, well, how does this sound? Trust God. Period. He said, because that's what you did in 1997. Don't forget that. And that's where we landed the plane. And that's why anytime you get an email from me, that's what it says at the bottom of it. Trust God, dot, 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 period. Because I know he was forming and shaping me into the man that I am right now. Forming and shaping me into the father and husband and professional that I am. And that there are going to be times where he paints with dark colors. And you'll have to go through it. And you ride out the storm. And you trust God. Period. So here's the deal. You look at this picture. There's standing up, that's Eric. That's Carmen in the middle, who we adopted from Paraguay. That's Maggie, who's got two awesome little daughters. There's Michael. And in the front, there's Ashley and Allison. And look, I tell people, we got a circus going on, but at least I get in free. Because I'm a sportscaster. My wife's a world changer. My wife's the one who first told me about adoption. She's always been the one who's always been about reaching out to you and not looking inward. So when she was the CEO of a group called Street Grace, a nonprofit that was fighting child sex trafficking, she learned all about how a lot of the girls who were aging out of the foster care system fall victim to these predators. So we're both over 50 at the time. She says, what do you think about adopting another child, a girl, and who's about to age out of foster care and keep her out of that kind of a life? And I said, chicken or fish, really? So we didn't adopt one, we adopted two. Out of foster care in Cleveland, Ashley and Allison. And I think I've told you that that heart for adoption comes from, is just reinforced by the idea and the knowledge that I've been adopted to. That there's value in everybody. Even with a kid who they say, don't take, boy is no good. Yeah, right. Don't forget those who have helped you along the way. This is a guy who 2 years after that BlackBerry picture, I was playing for the Big Apple Tigers in Sandy Springs. If you're old enough to remember Big Apple, it was a grocery chain. The coach was Roger Thompson, the man you see there. Last summer, I happened to be up in the hills of North Carolina and realized, you know, I might be somewhere near where Roger Thompson lives. Roger and I had stayed in touch since I played for him in 1967. Every now and then we would just talk on the phone. Sometimes it was once a year. Sometimes a couple of years would go by. But I found that those conversations with Roger in the last few years was kind of like talking to my dad, which I couldn't do anymore. And Roger had these great memories. He remembered those games we played when I was 10 like they had just happened yesterday. And so I said, I'm gonna put on my BlackBerry farmer hat here in North Carolina. I'm gonna surprise Roger Thompson, and I'm gonna just drop in on him and love on him for a half hour. Tell him how much he meant to me. And then he took me downstairs into this TV room downstairs. And this guy who I had gone to encourage says, this is all that's left of that championship trophy from 1967, but you take it home. Dang. Those BlackBerry moments are out there, folks, just waiting to happen. Sometimes when you try to be the one who initiates it, it comes back to you 10,000-fold. So that's Cheryl, and her hair is much better in that than the Romanian picture. She was having a bad hair year in that Bucharest picture. But this is what we're about now. What Cheryl and I are about is trying to spread the love of God to whoever and wherever we go. And hoping that when Katie Ann, who I'm holding, and Everett, who she's holding, we're hoping that at some point their kids and their kids after that will be sitting around their houses and they'll be describing the day as, boy, it was a BlackBerry moment. That's where we are right now. That the lessons that I was taught by my dad, that I tried to pass on to my son, that he's trying to pass on to his son, about BlackBerry moments and trusting God, period. That's our role right now. And I remember when I handed my son to my dad, and we took that picture in Alpharetta back in 1984. And then I went to see my son, who said, Dad, sit in this chair. Here, you hold Everett, and I'm just going to put my arm right here. And now let's take the picture. And how sweet a Father's Day gift was that? That's all we're trying to do, folks, is go from this generation to the next generation to the next generation, and let's be solid. Let's be grounded. Let's have a foundation of faith and trust that these other generations will look back on and say, that's where I got it. I don't know that I actually have to say anything about that picture. But let me leave you with this. So I mentioned that date, December 10th, 1997. My wife has been incredible about remembering that day every year and always doing something for my spiritual birthday. So one year, this had to be about 10 years ago, I'd work late, get back home, she's gone in the morning, I struggle out of bed, I walk into the kitchen, get a cup of coffee, and I look, and there's a little box on the kitchen table. And so I open this up, and look, despite my outward appearance, I'm not a rugged outdoorsman. But here's what, and I think they're going to be able to get a shot of this from, this compass is just beautiful, just a beautiful piece. And I'm assuming she didn't think that, you know, I wanted to go out in the wilderness and get lost and see if it worked or anything like that. I just, you know, she said, well, this is a cool gift. And you know what made the gift really cool? Was I looked at this little post-it note that she had written and put inside the box. And it simply said, remembering the day you found your direction. And I stood in the middle of my kitchen with my cup of coffee, and just wept. Remembering the day you found your direction. Remembering the day you said, I'll trust you. Remembering the day you said, enough about me-centered. I would encourage you. See, I have the luxury of being able to look at this every day on my dresser. It's a constant reminder. Check the settings on my compass. Am I heading in the right direction? Where have I veered off? Am I sticking to that goal of handing it down to be a blackberry farmer? To trust God, period. God bless you.